Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witch School's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witch School's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagan Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagan Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagan Tonight.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I'm Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, and a brother initiate, and hopefully soon to be teacher of the Unnamed Path.
And my name is Matthew Sidney. I am a songwriter, urban bard, mystic, and eternal student of the spiritual.
And you're listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of men who love men, and that was laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men, just in general. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show by calling in at area code 347-308-8222. You can hang out in the chat room, or you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_theup, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Today, we're delighted to have one of our fellow brothers and a teacher of the Unnamed Path, Aaron Sphinx Capps, as we delve into the discussing the topic and importance of doing shadow work. But before we get to Sphinx, you know, it's been a while since Matthew and I have been on the show together. So, you know, it might be a good idea for us to, you know, catch up and, you know, see what we've been doing. How have you been, Matthew?
I've been well. And Michael, I've missed you. It seems like it's been forever. Was it you interviewed Chase, and then I interviewed Cliff and Kai, and we've had amazing conversations here. And, you know, I think the interesting thing, some of our conversations do seem a little bit informed by some of the busyness and chaos and issues that have been cropping up for all of us. Everyone I talk to seems to be really going through it right now. Non-committal growth.
You know, I've been so busy with work, and you know, I moved this last month. I moved into a new apartment, and you know, I work retail. So this whole previous month has been just like hectic for me. I've been really slacking on a lot of stuff, and I did not, unfortunately, get a chance to listen to your episode with Kai. And I'm so upset because I really need to put that on my list to listen to as soon as possible. But I did get a chance to listen to your episode with Cliffy because, yes, that was the episode when I was in Dallas. And
yes.
my partner and I were listening to it on the way back to Illinois. Awesome episode. Cliffy is just such a fount of knowledge.
He is. I mean, it was effortless for me, you know, just, you know, wind him up and let him go. And
yes.
I mean, I learned so much and from that one conversation, was it an hour and a few minutes? I learned so much in that time than from reading half a dozen
I'm really anxious to see what that ritual that he wrote for the hand fasting was like.
We have to follow up with him. I haven't heard anything. We're going to have to follow up with him and find out.
Well, you know, this is also his busy time. Cliffy does this time of the year, he's really dug into the Texas Renaissance Festival down by Houston.
Okay.
His weekends and good portion of his week are tied up with getting his shop prepared for when all the people come down. And I want to say it should actually be wrapping up within the next week or so. All their weekends are like theme weekends. And so the last one is their Christmas weekend or Yule weekend. And I think I remember him saying something on Facebook about getting ready for Christmas down at the shop. So, you know, he's probably going to be, you know, winding down in the next couple of weeks. So we'll be able to, you know, get in touch with him and see if we can get that ritual.
Okay, good. Good. You know, a little bit of a follow-up from the last episode, and I'm just going to touch on it. This is a teaser, because I think we'll revisit this in the future. I did Kai to do a shamanic healing session for me. So that has happened, and it's really interesting, the stuff that came up, the stuff that he saw. And he, you know, he and I really don't know each other. So it's not like we've spent hours talking. It's not like he knows me that well. And stuff that came through was definitely very significant to my journey. So that's very interesting. And I would definitely love to have him on again, you know, kind of follow up with that kind of work and dig more deeply into it.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to go back and listen to that episode as soon as I can, because that sounds very interesting.
Yes, yes.
How was your holiday?
My holiday was, the food was amazing. And I'm very blessed. We have, you know, my roommates, and we're really more like family. We're very close, the three of us. So it was the three of us and some of our close circle of friends, and then a couple relatives. And it's a very diverse group of people in terms of ages and backgrounds, but it was a beautiful time. And lots of good food and champagne and good times, and it was exhausting. Because we had it here. So, but it was a little smaller. I mean, we've had 18 people before. This time we only had, I think, around 12 people around the table. So it wasn't so bad.
Good. And you recently went to Florida Pagan Spirit Gathering?
Yeah. So FPG, Florida Pagan Gathering, they have that in Lake Wales, Florida. And they actually do it twice a year. They do one around Samhain and one around Bealtain every year. And I've been working with a close friend of mine here on building our relationship with the spirit of the land. And we've been inspired to start doing workshops. So we were invited to do this workshop at FPG. And basically, participants got to meet and experience who we call Our Lady Florida. And maybe I'll ask Dion if he'd be willing to come on for an interview sometime, because really, I think he should tell the story. But we have made contact with a being who is really the spiritual essence of the entire peninsula. Florida, the state as a whole, has a very unique watershed, very unique geological history, very unique energy. And that energy and uniqueness is encapsulated in the special spirit of our land. And so we've been building this relationship with her, and that's actually fueled some of our environmental activism that we've gotten involved in recently. And part of our mission is to share that experience with other pagan folks, with spiritual folks, with shamanic practitioners, and help people build that relationship with her. And I think it's important for us to stop seeing the land as just a thing and start recognizing the land as a living being with its own consciousness and its own health. And that it's not something that we can possess, but that she is a part of our extended family. And so the workshop went very, very well. It looks like they are going to ask us to come back next time. And their main ritual was phenomenal. They reenacted the Aztec creation myth. They actually built a step pyramid in one corner of their large ceremonial circle. And mm-hmm. the costumes were amazing. The script was beautiful. It was really actually very moving and very beautiful. And I learned a lot about the Aztec belief system and their creation myth. And I don't know, there are a little bit of shades of light god, dark god dichotomy, light god, dark god relationship going on with some of the figures. Mm-hmm. in the Aztec myth. That's probably a topic for another time, but there's definitely some of that motif going on.
Very cool. Well, you know, like we said at, you know, the beginning of the show, we're going to be delving into and discussing the practice and importance of shadow work. And to help us with that, we have our brother, Aaron Sphinx Katz, and I believe Matthew would be introducing him.
Yes, Aaron Sphinx Katz is an integrative shadow seer. He works with vulnerable and the practice of holding space. Sphinx is an initiate and teacher of the Unnamed Path, an initiate of Anderson Ferry, and works as a sign language interpreter and interpreter professor at his local university. And if any of our listeners are new to the Unnamed Path, you might be wondering exactly what shadow work is. Of course, the Unnamed Path, we talk about the four practices, four pillars of our practice, which are magic / prophecy, shamanic healing / journeying, energy healing, death walking. This fifth element, shadow work, I think of it personally as almost the foundation upon which these four pillars stand. And I think we're going to bring Sphinx on and let him explain, because I think he can explain it best for our folks, what is shadow work, what it isn't, so everyone can get a better understanding.
And Sphinx, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay! Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
Real quick, can you just, for people that are new, give them a brief elevator definition of what shadow work is?
Shadow work is looking at those dark places of ourselves, untwisting them, bringing them into the light, and reintegrating them into our being so we can be whole creatures in our world.
Mm.
That's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Now, I think a lot of folks are familiar, they studied psychology in college or they've read books on pop psychology. And I want to clear up any confusion. Is there any connection between shadow work and the concept of the shadow in Jungian psychology?
There are people who will see parallels to that, but you have to understand, because we're working with shamanic entities and we're doing it in journey work, it is the pieces of ourselves that we have divorced, but we could never divorce completely. It's the pieces of ourselves that we were pushing away and trying not to recognize. And over time, those pieces coalesce into an actual entity with its own consciousness. So where psychology would say you're looking at symbols, our tradition looks at it as an embodied entity that one has to interact with, otherwise it sabotages us through the course of our existence.
I see. Now, before we get too deep into shadow work, Sphinx, tell us how you got involved in the Unnamed Path.
I got involved in the Unnamed Path by going to Pantheacon. And Pantheacon is a wonderful resource. It has different workshops for different spiritual traditions. And I was trying to find a way of claiming the sacred in my sexuality. So I was looking through this list, and I was like, a spiritual tradition for men who love men, taught by Hyperion. And I'm like, I have to go check this out. And so I did. Went to the workshop. After it was over, we exchanged contact information. I put a bolo, I guess, out over an email list in Houston, Texas, asking if other people had studied this or were looking into it. And myself and two other persons got together and took Hyperion's actual formal class, so the year-long apprenticeship. And just took to it like a duck to water, and I've been doing it ever since.
In your
I think I may have missed the question. Was there something specific you wanted me to address? I probably missed the question.
No. I think you answered it.
Yeah.
I'm nosy. I always ask people, oh, well, how did you find out about it? How did you get involved? I'm always interested in people's personal trajectory.
Well, that was actually a snapshot. If you want my full trajectory, I was a Bible-thumping Southern Baptist, and then I realized I like boys. And but during that process, my mother also got me into more charismatic versions of Christianity. So there was a lot of faith healing and doing what I now call journey work now, but it was deep prayer and meditation and seeking answers and that sort of thing. But then, you know, when it came out that I liked boys, I was asked to lead the church, which was a very interesting thing, talking about a current where, you know, you're experiencing it, it's real for you, it's nothing but love and acceptance, and then you're told this isn't for you, go elsewhere. So I went elsewhere, and I studied Buddhism for a year and realized some of the tenets work with me, but it's not my path. And then I studied Wicca for a time. I delved into my ancestry and did Native American shamanism, working with the totems. And then about the time I had sort of been like, okay, I guess I'm doing my own thing, a group of friends in Houston got together and said, hey, we're forming a community. Let's do magic work. And it was a group of eclectics, but there was a common thread running through everyone that they were studying Anderson Ferry stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing this without a teacher. And so my reason for going to Pantheacon was to find a teacher for that path. And in doing so, encountered Hyperion at the same time. And so got my teacher for Anderson Ferry, and then got my teacher for Unnamed Path, and then the rest is history.
Hmm. I don't think I ever heard that story.
But that is what
it
happened.
Yeah. In your opinion, Sphinx, what does the Unnamed Path offer that other paths do not?
There is an essence of sacred sexuality, owning the spirituality of your sexual drives, the spirituality in and around all of nature and in every living thing. There's a piece of ownership around, I don't care if you're going through hard times, you're still responsible for your behaviors. So there's that element of responsibility. It practices, the practices and the work of the Unnamed Path gives one total embodiment in who and what they are. It gives them practice at being present and makes us creatures of action and not reaction. So I've told people before that I learned more in my 1 year apprenticeship than in 10 years previous in solo studies. So it completely changed my life and helped me bring the sacred from my sitting altar where I sit every day or try to, but bringing that element into the car with me on the way to work, at my desk when I'm at work, while I'm doing my other activities of the day. So it can become something that's woven into your very existence.
You're also an initiate of the Anderson Ferry tradition.
I am.
Does that color your experience and understanding of the unnamed path?
Yes and no. I will say that when something touches on a truth, there are parallel truths in other traditions. They approach them differently. The tech with which to access it is different. The application sometimes is different. There are beings that have similar energy signatures, but they are not the same beings. I was told that on more than one occasion. I think when something is true, you will see it appear in different spiritual paths, but taught through a very specific lens of that path. So while I think there are parallel truths in them, I think they're also distinctly unique. How did it influence my understanding of the path? I'm an escapist when I have to deal with my shadow work, because when you look at yourself in the dark mirror of space and time and you see what you did to yourself, it's sometimes hard to accept, or you have that initial shock of, oh my God, what did I do? So my reprieve is I'm a workaholic, so I would jump into the studies of the other path to give myself a reprieve. And then when I was ready, I would go back and then confront that piece of the shadow head on, and then write it, and then bring it into my being. My shadow guide actually told me at one point that if I continued doing that, it was going to sabotage me later. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And so I kept doing it. And so I'm doing my unnamed path studies, and oh my God, a shadow, ah! Okay, so I delve into my Anderson Ferry studies, and oh my God, a shadow, and this shadow is different. What I mean by that is same shadow, I'm now having to process two different pieces of it simultaneously. Instead of processing one piece, then processing the next piece, and processing the next piece. So I got encountered with two different pieces that I had to process simultaneously. So, yeah. The biggest problem with shadow work is after you see it, you can't unsee it. And what I mean by that is after you realize... after you have a realization about yourself or realization of something that you've owned as a truth that is not a truth, you can't unsee that realization. So the work tends to be heavy, but one thing I've had to learn also is if you don't come at it with some type of humor, it's crazy making because it's so weighty. I feel like I'm meandering, like la, 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 la.
No, you're not.
No.
You're not. What does an integrative shadow seer do?
They assist other people in their shadow work. You come to me, you have conversation with me, and depending on your spiritual tradition, I can help you integrate those parts of yourself that you've previously divorced or warped or changed. So I sit with you. We have conversation. I might pull out my tarot cards. It might just be conversation. I can do journey work for you. I can help you fetch your shadow totems. I can help you fetch your shadow guides to help you with your integrative process. It's assisting someone else in their journey to wholeness through the lens of shadow work. The thing that was a hard lesson learned is I am not responsible for someone else's shadow work. That whole adage of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. It's that sort of thing where you can go, okay, here is the practice you need to use. It's up to them if they use it or not. I can't then force them to do it.
Right.
But for me, when I say I'm a shadow seer, I'm the person who I'll sit there and have a conversation with you and go, have you noticed you do this? Have you noticed this aspect about yourself? Is this something that you're owning? And if you're owning it, awesome. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm. Do you find that most people tend to wrestle with the same issues, or, you know, is everyone's shadow work completely unique?
To paint it with a broad brush, everyone's shadow is completely unique. The technique to heal the shadow and to bring it back in working relationship is the same regardless of the shadow. So it's one of those, everything's different, the tech stays the same. How you work with the shadow, how you bring it into conversation, how you change it from enemy to ally, all the tech is the same. But our shadows are different because something that you have a shadow around, I may not. And it's based on our history. It's based on what people have said over us, what people have said over us that we have then taken on as truth, regardless if it was actually true or not. It's one of those, you know, who told you were a monster? Who told you you were bad? Who told you were a villain? Who told you that? Go ahead.
No, finish, please.
No, it was just, you know, who told you that? And then after we look at the person who told us that, then we have to own the fact that we accepted it, believed it, and owned it, and held it in our being as truth, and that splintered ourselves and helped create a piece of our shadow.
Now, what are some of the things that can happen when we neglect our shadow work?
So several things. First is we're very reactive. When people talk about being triggered, I saw an interesting post where someone's like, where someone was discussing that when someone is triggered, they should never be triggered. I'm like, no, that's not it. You can be triggered. It's what you do after that. The trigger sets an emotional response. That emotional response is something buried in our past experience. There are certain words that can trigger us. There are certain events that can trigger us. I know friends who were sexually assaulted who, if people say the word rape, they're getting triggered. I know people who, myself included, the word fag is a trigger. I get very angry when I hear that word. So I can immediately then lash out at the person who said it, which then I'm no longer having conversation with that person. I'm pulling up that past experience, hanging it on that person in the present and interacting with them as if I'm in that experience again. So what I need to do as part of my shadow work is go into that experience, figure out what the root of that experience is, and then try to release it. Now then, I can be angry that someone uses that word. I can also choose what I do after that. So the goal of shadow work is to not be reactive. Something triggers me, I then act on emotion and impulse, and the house burns to the ground. But if something triggers me, and I pause, realizing that it's the memory of the past and not the current situation, I can then either dialogue with that piece of myself and go, we'll talk about this more later, and then I can choose what I do from there. For example, informing someone, hey, that word is not okay to say in my presence. So the goal of shadow work is to be less reactive and be a creature of action in our work. And part of it is being completely present in our being, being completely self-embodied. So when we have a situation like that, we recognize it, pause, don't react, assess the situation, decide what is best for everyone involved, and then take action. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
What does the Unnamed Path's approach to shadow work differ from the approach taken by other paths that you've encountered? Not necessarily just Anderson Ferry, but you know, Wicca or anything else, any other like magical paths that you've come in contact with?
Well, I'll talk. There's one path. I'm going to use path in air quotes. The works of Brené Brown have been the closest thing that I have seen that is actual shadow work. She has a trilogy of books. The first is called The Gifts of Imperfection, and it's owning who and what you are. The second one is Daring Greatly. After you own and who and what you are, you go all in with whatever you're doing in your life. And then her third book is called Rising Strong, which I'm still in the middle of reading, which is after you know who and what you are, after you've gone all in, when you get knocked on your ass, how do you get back up again? So far, in anything that I've studied, I would say that Brené Brown's works comes the closest, and she's a sociologist, so it's from the realm of academia. But her tech at approaching it is completely different. I have never seen anyone's tech be the same. I've seen the end result be the same, and I can see how each piece, how everyone's techniques in approaching the work is beneficial, and how it goes through each person's lens, each path's lens. I feel like I'm talking in generalities, and I'm getting stumped on the head to do other stuff. So while I was doing my studies, one of the issues that came to the forefront of my mind was, I'm afraid of power. Okay? I'm afraid of power. Well, I had to then look at all the ways that my fear of power sculpted what I did in my life. I didn't go for an advanced interpreter certification. I let someone else take the lead, even though I knew I could do a better job. It influenced all of these areas of my life. So then, when I started doing shadow work, why am I afraid of power? Am I afraid of power? Oh, I'm not afraid of power. Then what is it about power? What's causing that fear? Go a level deeper. I'm afraid of not being able to wield that power correctly. Okay, well, let's go a little bit deeper. What does that mean? What that means is I was afraid to have power without the wisdom to use it correctly. But because of that, I held myself back when I could have kept going forward. So then through processing that, I was able to breathe, kind of extend my auras out a little bit bigger, and then take more chances going through my life. So that's a personal example. That was one of mine. I have several, but that was one of mine. What else? Other traditions sometimes call this demon work, but with demon work, they're trying, for some traditions, it's they're holding a piece of your soul. You had a horrendous experience. So a piece of your soul broke off, and something grabbed it and was taking care of it. So every time you're interacting with it, you're not interacting with that piece of yourself that was broken off. You're interacting with the thing that's protecting it. So it's very vicious because it's protected. Mm. So what you do is you would interact with the being protecting it. You would thank it for its service, and then you would retrieve that piece of yourself back. And that's called soul sharding. Okay, that's a different tech on some of the stuff that we do. For me, what works best is the whole, let's just deal with the shadow self directly. I've always found the Unnamed Paths version of it to be superior just because of how it's laid out. And the results are quick, dirty, and easy. Easy is the wrong word. But you see results very quickly.
I often feel like I, especially recently, these past couple of weeks, I often feel like I go back to the same deep fears and wounds over and over again. And especially when I think I'm making great strides and, oh, I'm in such a good place and I'm in control of my life, and then I get whooped outside the head. Is this normal? Am I doing something terribly wrong?
The only thing that you're doing, quote, wrong is not honoring the work you've already done. oh my gosh, I'm afraid of power. Okay, I've done all this work to be okay with power, and then I find myself reverting to that old pattern as if I'm afraid of power. Well, what the fuck? I just did all of this work to get where I am. Why am I falling back to that old pattern? Well, it's a pattern, first. And second, it did not discount all the work you've done. You've integrated a portion of it. You need to integrate now the next portion of the work. That was a hard lesson learned for me, because I was very quick to try to grab up the flog of self-abuse and go, what the hell are you doing? My dear coven sister has an analogy of, if we are doing work, depending on which version of the work we're doing, we're either going up or down a spiral staircase, or up or down the outside of an oak tree. So we're either going down into the roots or we're going up into the branches. Well, every time you're in, we'll say, north, that issue is there. Okay, so I'm walking around the tree, walking around the tree, walking around the tree, and then I encounter the issue again. Yes, and the issue is smaller, and you are wiser, so now you can incorporate it and integrate it on a deeper level. But what we tend to do is self-flagellate all the way and knock ourselves all the way back down to where we started with it. We may not even need to do that, because we've already processed a huge chunk of it. So where do we need to process now? What is going on now? Where am I in my life now? If I'm processing something in relation to my father, am I processing something in relation to my mother? Is it more of a spiritual father that I'm processing, not my actual father now?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all of these nuances that when we're looking at it, it's when we say shards, it's like crystals. We might be incorporating facets of it, the entirety of it, when we first encounter it. And it could take several sessions to do that. And it could be, all right, I've incorporated enough to move forward. But then through life lessons, okay, let's go back and revisit this. And sometimes the revisiting is, oh, wow, I still have a tender spot there. It's completely integrated, but I'm tender there. But is tender a bad thing? Does it help me in my compassion work? Does it help me in my connection work? You know, somewhat like you're healing from a wound or a bruise, and you have a friend that likes to go over and go, keep, poke. Well, is it just sensitive to when someone else is experiencing that? Is that why it's so sensitive? There are some wounds that never heal fully, and I say that tongue-in-cheek. I believe all wounds heal fully, but I believe that sometimes a fully healed wound can either be scarred so the area is stronger, or it retains a sensitivity that will never go away, but that sensitivity is how you're going to connect to others who've gone through similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow work, you know, of course, it's a very personal thing that we all have to deal with, but would you say it's possible to do shadow work in a group setting?
We can do journey work together. We can do something that's called peeling. I recommend people who are just starting shadow work to get a journal and write down emotional reactions you've had that day. Usually things in regard to shame, which is Brené Brown's favorite one. They have like shame, fear, anger, resentment, stuff like that. when did those emotions come up for you today? So you do it in the evening. When did these emotions come up for you today? Why did those emotions come up? And then start revisiting your life experiences and why did that situation trigger that emotional response? And that helps us look at them. And I just tangented. Michael, repeat your question.
I was just saying, is it possible, you know, to do shadow work in
group
like
work,
a group setting?
Group work, yes.
Group work.
It is possible, but people are going to be on vastly different areas with their shadow. So we can teach tech together. We can journey together, but the results are going to be instantly different. Where you are in your shadow work might be your first time meeting it. Where I am in my shadow work, I may have never met him. Where Matthew is in his shadow work, he might be longstanding allies with his work. So the difficulty then is, if I'm leading a workshop for everyone, how can I teach tech that will benefit the new person, and the old person who thinks it's old hat, how can I make it refreshing and new? If I answer that question, if I can come to a complete answer to that question, I'll have my workshop. I'm still working on it. presently, I found it to be much more edifying to do one-on-one work with people when they're doing shadow work. It's just easier. And anytime I say the word easy, that's a trigger for me in a good way to go, so you're not pushing yourself. So to me, that means there's an answer out there. I just haven't found it yet.
Mm.
So.
Okay. Now, I'm going to phrase this in a personal way. Of course, in my one-year apprenticeship with Unnamed Path, I did a significant amount of shadow work. And, of course, shadow work never really ends. Do you think it's beneficial for folks to have some kind of structured, regular practice that they do, such as, a journey to check in with your fear guide once a month or something like that to just kind of keep the ball rolling?
Yes. The shadow acts like a wounded animal or an abused child. It does not respond well to words. Its favorite phrase is show me. So I can, you know, light 50 candles and have a 2-hour ritual and have all of this like written out and do this long, huge sorcery thing. And that doesn't mean nearly as much as having a conversation with your shadow every morning when you have a cup of coffee. And then doing one shadow, doing one underworld visit to visit the shadow face-to-face at least once a week, if not more. It's quantity, not quality. It's all about, that actually came out really bad the way I said it. It's consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Do I know that I'm going to see you every day at 8? Then we're building a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If we're building a relationship, you've shown I can trust you, there's a better working relationship then. So whatever your thing is it every night you writing in a journal? Is it every morning over coffee having a discussion? Because the shadow, when we say shadow work, when we first encounter the shadow, it is the thing that has been tripping us up in our life. And, of course, the thing that has been tripping us up in our life has been ourselves. So when we say we're integrating ourselves back into wholeness, I don't mean we're integrating ourselves to the point that the shadow and I become the same entity. You will always have this piece of yourself that you can look at in a dark mirror. But is it whole? Is it an ally? Is it the one telling you, that person right there is a motherfucker, stay away from him? Is it a person? Is it that ally who's saying, someone's on your 6? Is it an ally, or is it the person who's kicking your feet out from under you when you need to be standing the most? So the goal of shadow work is to change the shadow from enemy to ally. And if we're like, oh my God, we're good, I haven't had a shadow problem in so long, and da 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 da, so I've stopped showing up for morning coffee, I've stopped showing up for my journal writing, that's the time that the shadow will then recede from me and become enemy again. It's easier to bring it back into a working relationship if you've had a working relationship. But the goal is for you to be whole and present and to encounter life with the full force of who and what you are, and to quote Hyperion's favorite phrase, to suck the marrow out of life. You're enjoying it so much.
What do you think is the one thing that most people overlook or that they could do differently to be more successful with their shadow work?
The simple stuff is, there are two things I'm going to respond to with that. The first is the simple stuff is key. Again, the shadow is like a wounded child or an abused animal. So it responds to behavior more than words. It's all about show me. Consistency. And be consistent in the show me. The other part of that, and something that I have found through speaking to other unnamed path brothers, is your shadow will develop a symbolic language that it uses to communicate with you. It'll be something you enjoy and has an edge to it. So one of our brothers, his imagery is Star Wars. So when he's interacting with his shadow, and he and his shadow aren't on really good speaking terms, Star Wars imagery is used when he goes and visits it. For me, it uses vampire imagery. So all claws and fangs and blood, and, you know, is it the vampire from the Nosferatu series, or does he look like an Andrycean vampire who's all sex and lust and let me show you how to seduce someone? The one thing I would say is work with your shadow enough where you know what language your shadow wants to speak to you in. We do not pick the language, the shadow does. So figure out what that language is. And it might take, some people can figure it out in a couple of weeks, and some people can figure it out only after months of working with them. It depends on how divorced they are from the shadow. But being consistent, doing the simple things is very important, and then trying to figure out what sort of language, I use in air quotes, what imagery your shadow uses in communicating with you.
Are there resources for someone who has a need to begin this kind of work, or who is thinking that they need to begin this kind of work, and who's just starting out?
The best resources that I have found are Brené Brown series. It's less woo-woo and more, it's less magic and more academic, so it takes some of the mystery out of it for me. The other one is Christopher Penzack's book called Spirit Allies, because for me, as an unnamed path initiate, as a shaman of the unnamed path, the most important thing for me is that you have spiritual allies to help you in your interaction with your shadow self. So finding out what your shadow totems are. Those are the animals with which you have a very visceral reaction to, usually fear or ick, like, ew, that sort of reaction. Those tend to be our shadow totems. And then looking either online or in other resources as to what does that totem mean when it's shadowed? What behaviors are exhibited when that is shadowed? And the other thing is to journey into the underworld. Use the unnamed path tech, the stuff on the podcast, or get into an initiatory class, an apprenticeship class, and actively seek out an ally from the underworld who will help you in this work. I cannot emphasize how beneficial having your shadow totem and a shadow ally in this work is. Be they someone with skin on or someone incorporeal. Either one, just get an ally in this work.
Mm-hmm.
And have a daily practice. So when you see what you've done to yourself, or when we see what we've done to ourselves and we go, ah, we know how to return to center faster. We can sit, we can align, we can do a cleansing rite, and we can continue the work without it freaking us out.
Hmm. Yeah. With shadow work, are there special considerations for people who are diagnosed with mental health issues, such as chronic depression or bipolar disorder?
I recommend doing the shadow work with your counselor. The thing that I've loved about counseling and psychology is they're finally catching up to spiritual practices. So they have stuff called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is very similar to the work that we do. But if you do it with a counselor, it's under guidance. Now, it's not magical. It's very academic and scientific in its approach. And if we are a person who is experiencing some sort of mental duress, that might be the best way to go. So I highly recommend that if someone is experiencing any sort of mental anguish or discomfort as a result of this work, that they seek professional help, because that work continues even in their office.
Of course, it being the holiday season, and I think for a lot of us, it brings up a lot of issues dealing with, you know, seeing family or not seeing family and all kinds of fun stuff and sometimes not so fun. Do you have any suggestions for us, for our listeners, for surviving this time of year without having a complete meltdown?
I'm going to sound like a broken record. Bring a journal with you. Write down what you don't like. Write down what you do. Speak aloud those things that you like. I really love my niece. I really love my nephew. I'm really missing mom. I wish dad were here. Write down those things that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Also write down those things that you're struggling with, because the struggle will inform the shadow work. But in the midst of that, if we don't write down what we're grateful for, the shadow work is meaningless.
Right.
We need to have the joy there. We need to have the love there. It needs to be all of us or none of us. And if we're biting our tongues, don't make it a knee-jerk reaction. Make it a conscious choice. I am choosing to bite my tongue on this issue. If I'm speaking out, do not speak out with venom. I am choosing to speak out, and this is the choice I'm choosing, and this is how I choose to phrase it. Find others who will support you, who will love you, because I think what happens is we have so many putting on of airs and so many I'm smiling on the outside and I'm screaming on the inside. We need to be around those people who can hold us while we're screaming.
Mm, yeah.
That's part of shadow work too. Because denying that we're screaming, it feeds the enemy aspect of the shadow.
Right.
I'm also fond of my brothers and my loved ones who, while they're holding me while I'm screaming, can make me laugh. Or while they're holding me while I'm screaming, will go, okay, I've held you for 5 minutes. It's time for us to stop screaming. And I'm not talking about grief process, because we all have different types of grief process. I'm talking about the, yes, we're wounded. Okay, it's time to get up now. They're the ones who know you and in love say, it's time to get up now. We have held you in the ditch of shit for long enough. In love, it's time to get up. Because part of sometimes what happens, the danger in shadow work, if you're not working it with someone who knows their stuff, is our ruts get deeper and we feel more trapped instead of more freed.
Mm.
That's the danger of shadow work, is it reinforces the rut we're in.
Right.
You know, just as we individually have our own shadow work to do, would you say that there's a collective shadow work that needs to be done? For example, for a family or an institution or even, you know, our country with everything that's been going on lately with the Dakota Access Pipeline, the election. Would you say that, you know, that is a collective shadow work that we need to come together and work on together?
I'm going to do the very magical answer of yes and no. And this is what I mean by that. Because as a shadow, as someone who actively deals with shadow work, I can look at a country, I can look at a community, I can look at whatever and go, oh my gosh, so-and-so is embodying the shadow. Shadow work to be done properly requires first a willingness to do it. Then it involves doing it and then consistently engaging in the work and going toward healing. As a community, as a country, I don't see all four of those things in play. So as a country, could we do something like that? Not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying everyone would have to be on board with doing the work. Everyone would have to be wanting to heal. Everyone, and when I get to the everyone's, all of a sudden I get very upset because I, you know, I'm a shadow seer and I'm a hammer and everything I look at looks like a nail.
Mm.
How do I engage my culture who is currently undergoing a very powerful uprising in its collective shadow? And how do we heal that if not everyone wants to engage in the work? I don't know the answer to that question. I wish I did. I think the answer is you can't, at least not now. I cannot do your shadow work for you. But can I be as clean as possible so that when you show me your shadow, I can help you deal with it? So is the answer for the magical community and the spiritual community to be as right with their shadows, so that when we encounter other people's shadows, we can help them? Because there are times that people say stuff and I want to deck them. Hitting them is not healing. It feels great, but it's not healing. So I don't have an answer to that question yet. Or my answer is, my answer is no, caveat. I don't have the answer to that question yet. I'm not saying it's not out there, but because it requires a willingness to look at it, a willingness to do the work, as a group, everyone would have to be on board. And I do not see that based on what's happened of late.
Yeah. Or maybe the best we can do is to dig into our personal work and keep being dedicated in that. And, you know, as, you know, the microcosm kind of thing, as we heal ourselves.
Yes.
Collective,
do that thing
a little
because,
bit more forward.
Exactly. One of the, quote, dangers of shadow work is the more you do it, the more your very presence will bring up other people's shadows. Because if you're right, meaning not, I don't mean right as in not wrong, I mean you're righted in yourself, that sets up a specific vibration that makes other shadows come forward. So if we're talking about specifically in the main path, we're talking about resonance and how this is like this. We all have this desire to remember, to bring these pieces of ourselves back into a collective being. Well, if you're resonating at a very high frequency because you have integrated so much, when you're around me, all my shadow stuff starts coming forward, begging to be dealt with. So can the magical community be so right in our work? And I keep using the word right. I want to come up with a different word. Be so whole and integrated in our work. Can we be so whole and so integrated that our mere presence in our society does a mass call for everyone else to be whole and integrated too? I would be interested to see the outcome of that.
Yeah. It'll be. I think you have us in deep thought, Sphinx. Michael and I are gears, and our minds are just turning. This is all soaking in. Before we wrap up, Sphinx, do you have anything, any message or any information that you want to share with our listeners?
Shadow work is very rewarding. I usually explain it like it's when I'm going to the gym, but I'm comfortable on my couch. I don't want to get up and go to the gym. And then there's much resistance and screaming and gnashing of teeth as I put on my gym clothes and then I start heading down to the gym. And as soon as I'm in the gym and I'm doing the work of the gym, I'm enjoying it. I can feel myself getting better. And then when I leave the gym, I have the endorphins kicking in and my body feels invigorated and I feel better. So when we look at before the process, during the process, and after the process, most of the time, the resistance comes before the process. Because once you start this work, if you do not do this work, the work will do you. So I would encourage everyone, whatever your process is, to keep doing it and let it be consistent and always show up. Check in every now and again, because consistency is key. And please know that if you are doing this work, you are not responsible for someone else's shadow work, nor are you responsible for showing them their shadow. So your work is not someone else's, and someone else's is not yours. You can find parallels, and you can connect on those parallels. You can find comfort because someone else is dealing with the exact same shit you are, and that's awesome. But just because you're with someone and it's comforting because we're both in the same steps, don't think, I'm not doing shadow work because they're not. Their process and your process are different. Maybe they're going one more time around that old tree, and you're ready to go to the next step.
Do you find that often happens, that people hit that stumbling block of, you know, allowing someone else's journey to interfere with their own work?
It's so shadow work. There's a book out called The War of Art. And the war of art is all of those things that get us in the way of us doing our work. What is that resistance? What is that? And it seems to be a very powerful, insurmountable thing until you move. But I just want to play one more round of my video game. Have you done your spiritual sit yet? No. Put down the controller. And it's very easy to put down the controller. Mm-hmm. We make it hard. It's that resistance. So anything that we can use as resistance, we as humans tend to, especially in shadow work. Because shadow work means you will change. You will not be the same when you start this work. So if you're not going to be the same, resistance is very high, but resistance is like this huge screen projector, and all you have to do is go through the curtain. If you can go through, it looks huge, but it's two-dimensional. It can't stand on its own. It takes one little action against it, but every time you step, you're going to encounter resistance because our being sometimes fights against it. So to answer your question, in so much that we use other people's works or lack of works to empower our own resistance, yes, they can cross streams.
That makes sense.
Oh, well, you know, an hour... When you have good conversation, the hour goes by so fast. Like, I didn't even realize.
Oh,
wow,
it's been an hour, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually went a little bit over, which is okay.
That's fine.
It was good. I think important. Thank you, Spence. I think it's a serious subject, and this is the kind of stuff that I think a lot of people are reluctant to talk about. You know, it's more fun to talk about, you know, candle magic and spirit contact and drumming and you know, the fun and groovy stuff. But I think that what we talked about today is really the nitty gritty. This is really what we're healing. You know, this is what we're talking about, is, you know, you can't heal something until you diagnose. And I think that's what we're talking about today. So it was heavy, it was deep, but this was really important.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
We enjoyed having you on the show with us, Sphinx. Oh, goodness. Well, let's see. What, you know, before we go, who was the author of that book you said, The War of Art?
Oh, gosh, The War of Art. I'm literally looking my collection right now. Did I loan it to someone? Give me half a tick. Yeah, I know, right?
Is it Stephen Pressfield?
That would be him, Stephen Pressfield. Pressfield, all one word. Yes, Stephen Pressfield.
Okay. I was looking it up so that I can link it on our Facebook page. You know, I have all these pages open now that I'm going to link as resources that you have given us.
Now then, The War of Art specifically is talking about the blocks between you and your creative outlet. So, Mr. Matthew the Bard, what stops you from going and picking up your instrument? Because it's not picking up the instrument. Once you've picked up the instrument, you've won. It's when you've gotten from your chair to the instrument. What
have you been spying on me in your crystal ball? I have no idea.
No, I know how creative I know how creatives work. I've helped a lot of you in your shadow work. But what's funny is the moment we get out of the chair.
Yeah.
It's all of the resistance that's keeping us in our chair. But anyway, the
yes.
War of Art, it's very cute. Every page is maybe a paragraph. And it talks about the quote-unquote strength of resistance, which it has none, and then how we overcome it. So, yeah, it's a great little read. It's a great little read.
Okay, I'm gonna look for that.
Well, they have good some
stuff.
Good sales on Amazon. Well, thank you again. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
Pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you, Matthew, for being on the show. Thank
you,
everyone who's listening.
Yes, thank you to our listeners, and we'll be back.
Yes. Yeah. Again, you've been listening to Walking Down Lane Path. If you would like to get in touch with Matthew or myself, you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at walking_theup, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. You know, we try to post whenever we're, you know, a good amount ahead of time when we're going to have a show. You know, we're going to get these other resources out to y'all through the Facebook page. So, hope everyone has an awesome day, and we will talk to you, oh gosh, when is the next show? In a couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right, guys, thank you both. I love you, and we'll do this again soon.
Love you guys. You have a beautiful.
Bye.